This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 236 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I've been saying it on this show a good bit, but this year's wide receiver class is really deep, but it's also really flat. Meaning, there are a lot of good wideouts to choose from, but there's no consensus top player. Maybe you'll feel differently after today's show. Maybe after you hear today's guest, you'll have more clarity as to who the top receivers in this class are. I called up Josh Norris of RotoWorld for this wide receiver show because I really wanted his film-based takes on so many of the wideouts who are about to be drafted later this month. Aside from hating the fact that I go by JJ, Josh is a great guy, and he's an awesome, awesome draft analyst. I really enjoyed our back-and-forth conversation about this year's wide receiver class, and I know that you guys will too. Before we get to that discussion, though, I wanted to send a quick reminder that FanDuel's biggest baseball contest of the year is here. It's the World Fantasy Baseball Championship. If you think you have what it takes to finish at the top, head to FanDuel.com and qualify now to get a trip to the live WFBC Finals in San Diego, where you'll play for a share of $2 million. Eligibility restrictions apply. So Josh, we sort of haven't really had like a really good wide receiver class in almost 5 years, I would say. Do you think that this is the best wide receiver class that we've seen since that epic 2014 one?
Yeah, you know, the story for the last few years after that epic 2014 one, right? Like everyone wanted to find big wide receivers that could also play small, right? Like we all wanted, even dating back to like 2011, we all wanted like the next Julio Jones. All teams wanted the next AJ Green. And you kind of realize that, hey, those types of players don't grow on trees. Like, they're not common.
Right.
But in many cases, like, the NFL tried to find those. I mean, you can look at big wide receivers that just did not turn out good. Like, John Baldwin in that same class, right? You had Kelvin Benjamin. Mike Williams maybe not worth, you know, a top 10 selection. Kevin White, for example, right? Like, these to me were kind of like trying to find the perfect ideal statues in the quarterback, like Peyton Manning's and Tom Brady's. Meanwhile, the position has progressed into mobile quarterbacks. For wide receivers, it's progressed into getting the ball in their hands with quick, shifty, explosive bursts and separation, and then allowing them to win after the catch. So I kind of think like the position, how it's used in the NFL, has transitioned along with the talent. But this class, like JJ, we finally have one that combines both. Like, we have ones that have plenty of receivers that are 6'2", 6'3", 220-plus pounds. So finding those, like, complete wide receivers that win big and win small, as we've seen, is super difficult. But I bet we see 2 to 3 to 4, which we haven't had for a very long time. You know this for fantasy. Like, people were obsessed with size in the red zone, and then it all came down to separation.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, one of the players that could really stand out in this class, or has the potential to, is your number one, the top guy in this class that you have, Hakeem Butler. Can you explain sort of what you see in him and why he is your number one? And why do you think there seems to be so much variation in how other scouts are viewing Hakeem Butler?
Yeah, and that's like a whole other topic that I hope we take some time on too. But first, I'll kind of like outline what I love most about Hakeem Butler. Where do you have him, JJ? Can I ask that?
Yeah, I have him number two.
Great. I mean, so we're basically seeing the same thing. Like, anytime, especially with this receiver group, that there's not necessarily that one standout that everyone's in love with. Like, if you're in like a two receiver range, that's totally cool in my book, right?
Yeah.
Like with Hakeem Butler, again, he's 6'5", 228 pounds, I believe, 227, and offers an excellent athletic profile, 83rd percentile. Now, he didn't go and do the agility scores, probably because he saw DK Metcalf. So he's like, nah, fam, not doing that. But what I love about him is that you see him line up on the left side. You see him line up on the right side. You see him line up in the left slot. You see him line up in the right slot. You see him win short with whip routes on 4th-and-1 against Iowa. You see him work inside on intermediate routes. And then JJ, he led this class in 20-plus yard catches and 20-plus yard receiving yards, okay, receptions that came from 20-plus yard receptions. And he offers, I mean, some real flashes of winning after the catch. Now, he's not, you know, a Julio Jones. He's not an AJ Green. I won't go that far because he is a little bit more lumbering in those situations. But for how much we have to project players there's not that much of a projection here. Like, I'm not someone that necessarily evaluates off a checklist, you know, like, okay, did I see this? Okay, I can mark that off. Did I see this next thing? Okay, good. I want to get like a fluid feel for the player. And with Hakeem Butler, every time that I wanted to see him do something, he did it like in the next snap. So to me, that's an easy evaluation. And at that size, at that frame, winning at all levels, that's, to me, puts him at the number one spot. Why do you think that there's such a dichotomy in how people view him?
I mean, I think a lot of it probably has to do with the fact that, I know from at least an analytical perspective, a lot of it has to do with the fact that we only have 1 year of production from him, of elite production, right? And so that's why, actually, when I looked at things, one of the top comps that I thought for him, and I actually can see it too, was Brandon Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
It was another player who broke out late, only had one real college, and now obviously has the size, right? But I think that gives some folks some hesitation just from an overall prospect build standpoint, is that whenever you see a prospect who, you know, hasn't done much, throughout, I mean, and he was playing behind other guys who then ended up not doing much at the NFL level. That scares people.
Right.
So that's definitely a knock.
But what's wild to me is it's both sides too. Like, the number side might not like him because of the breakout age that you talked about. And some people think, like, I mean, he is older. He's not, though. Like, to me, it's super normal for a receiver to enter the league at 23 years of age.
Yeah.
But then it's also the people that solely watch tape, right?
Yeah.
Solely watch games. People who I, like, really respect. I think Dane Brugler has him as, like, number 60 overall. He's outside of Daniel Jeremiah's top 50. I think that Lance Zierlein at one point had him as wide receiver 13, and now he's up to wide receiver 12, you know, like, yeah. These are people that obviously do the work that just aren't seeing it. And they're super connected to the NFL, right?
Yeah.
And so I have no feel for how the NFL will interpret Hakeem Butler's evaluation. It certainly doesn't seem like he's being mentioned in round one. Maybe he ends up going in round two. It wouldn't shock me if he goes in round three. But I think that we just don't see these types of receivers coming along very often. And honestly, like, if you don't like him, you'll probably compare him to Jahleel Scott from last year.
Yeah.
Remember that name?
Yep.
Like this lumbering, slower receiver on the outside that might struggle to separate and isn't as precise and crisp and create separation in his routes. But man, like, what I see is just a player that no matter where you put him on the formation, again, he was one of the most productive slot receivers in this year's class.
Yep.
And then he was one of the most productive outside receivers in this class.
Yep.
And then you see him like sink his hips on fourth and one, like I said, at Iowa, and create separation. That's just uncommon to me. But it's going to be a really interesting subject to follow for a few years, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, to your point about, you know, the dichotomy that you're seeing with film guys, I see it a lot with the analytical guys as well, mostly because they're weighing the pre-final season numbers harder than what I will. You know, I've seen the final season numbers being a lot more meaningful in general for these prospects. And his final season numbers, he had 45% of his team's touchdowns his final year, 42% of his yards. He's the only wide receiver from a Power 5 conference that did that in this class. So you have the production, you know, you have what you've been seeing with your eyes. I've seen it as well. I mean, I think that he has the potential to make a Brandon Marshall, potentially AJ Green-like impact in the NFL. I don't think that we should just throw that out there throw that assumption out there, but at least that's there for him.
For sure. And like I said, he even has some opportunities and exposures of where he wins after the catch as well. Like, I'm not going to put him in that elite territory. I do think that, honestly, if we can peel back the curtain here a little bit, JJ, like, part of the draft process is finding prospects you really love and in some ways, like, attaching your name to them, right? Like,
yeah, right.
Because, I mean, we're all watching these players. We all like them of varying degrees, but you're always going to find someone who likes a player more than you, even if you absolutely love them. But Hakeem Butler is absolutely someone who I think can shine in just about any scenario, because I do think for his size, he creates separation. And even if he doesn't, he can go up and win those 50-50 contested situations as well.
Yeah, you know, another polarizing wide receiver in this class is DK Metcalf. He could end up being the first wide receiver off the board. How do you feel about Metcalf? And then another question that I have is, you know, obviously I look at numbers a lot with this stuff, and I have my projection, my prospect model, and I'm looking at production. And A.J. Brown straight up outproduced DK Metcalf at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that factors into how you look at this in general, and how you kind of view those two wide receivers against one another.
Yeah. Look, DK Metcalf, I just talked about how Akeem Butler, you were able to see him from basically every single alignment and see him winning in every single scenario. DK Metcalf was locked to the left side of the formation on the outside. So what that allows, and he basically was running, I know you play some video games here, JJ. You know, when a video game is on rails, right? Like you are following a strict path and you're not really allowed to break it, and it's just like a story-based game. This is a weird analogy, but that's a lot of the time of what DK Metcalf is supposed to do as a route runner.
Yeah,
you know, he doesn't necessarily have the right to get open, okay? Because everything, all of his routes were off a vertical plane. He was asked to run go routes, and he was asked to run curls off of that, and he was asked to run comebacks off of that. That's it, you know? It's like in that outside quarter of the field is where he operated. Now, there a few exposures going against that, and that's totally fine. But that does give me concern, you know, because projection is difficult. And if we are basically only looking at what this player did at the college level from a production and game standpoint, and then projecting that in the NFL, not knowing who the person is at all, I'm trying to hang my hat on ways that he won in college and if that wins in the NFL. I mean, I'll tell you what, the way he won in his routes with his athleticism, and if a corner tries to get his hands on him, he's going to bruise you up a little bit. As Matt Waldman put it on my podcast, he'll put some red marks on you, throw you around and try to get right past you and just out-athlete you. That works. But in the other ways, JJ, it reminds me, not from an age standpoint, of a Kevin White evaluation in some ways. You know, Kevin White was glued to the right side at West Virginia. He only ran three routes. Then, and I know that his career was kind of derailed by a lot of injuries, but that's a lot to ask someone to do, to move around. Because again, if I can just finish this point on sticking to one side of the field, it's because you only have to work on your releases from that alignment. You only have to work on your footwork from that alignment, your routes from that alignment, rather than the other three. And so you're able to perfect those as much as possible. And again, totally am on board with him being an athlete, but you have to do a little bit more in terms of nuance and creating separation for me to be completely all in on you as a receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to bake in ambiguity into how you evaluate a player, right?
Yeah.
There are plenty of question marks just given what we've seen and what we've seen not only through film, but also through the production, as I said. I mean, is A.J. Brown, do you have him as a better prospect than over DK Metcalf right now?
I think I have them kind of neck and neck. And it's an interesting name you brought up, because A.J. Brown was basically a slot receiver,
right?
You know, and so he was able to move around. He was able to create, and they were able to create more for him in those areas, right? Like, we talk about it in the NFL that, hey, slot guys are different than the outside receivers because there's more, the space is easier to create for them, right? The opportunities are easier to create for them. It's even easier at the college level. But I think this is overlooked a little bit in A.J. Brown's evaluation. Down the stretch when DK Metcalf was missing games, A.J. Brown was moved to the outside.
Yep.
I think he has like something like 100 plus snaps on the outside, and he looked great in that area. So to me, I'm a little bit more comfortable in my evaluation of AJ Brown. I think that DK Metcalf has a higher ceiling, but if I'm looking for, you know, an instant contributor or someone to post production earlier in their career, it wouldn't shock me if AJ Brown does that at a higher level.
So a wide receiver that my model loves is N'Keal Harry. When you look at his market share numbers, his breakout age, his measurables are pretty decent. He's a very complete wide receiver analytically.
Yeah.
He looks like a safe prospect, but I know that there are issues specifically with his separation. So how do you view N'Keal Harry, and maybe who's his comp that you have?
Well, he's super comfortable in contact, right? And I think that is important to know, because that's how he's going to have to win in the NFL. You know, he's already doing that at the college level. A few weeks ago on the Roto-World Football podcast, Evan Silva and I kind of broke this down where, and JJ, I'll pose this to you. Like, how many big slot receivers are out there on a consistent basis that we can count on for production? Is it Larry Fitzgerald and I guess Juju and that's it? Because I'm not going to throw Mohamed Sanu in there as a player that we can count on week in and week out for production. Am I missing anyone on that list?
No, and to this point, that's why I do think that an interesting comp for N'Keal Harry is Marcus Colston.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's that type of player. But I am curious if you think that there could be more, because I think that the could there be more question with N'Keal Harry is, could he be Dez Bryant?
And I would say that he did. It's not like he was glued to the slot in college. Like, he played on the outside in college. I just think that almost all of his successful plays were from the inside. But not just like short passes. Like, he was able to create deep as well. And for a guy that when he's afforded space and catches it on the move, he has some real long speed to continue to create long gains as well. I would say with his type, and it's kind of the same thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about it with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, like, how many – the goal of a quarterback, okay, and the goal of an offense is to throw to open receivers, right? Mm-hmm. What if and how many quarterbacks are willing – to throw to receivers that are not open, right? That will have to be contested. Because really when a quarterback is going through his progressions, sure, maybe the top five, the top 10 will say, oh, okay, my receiver has inside position, inside shade on this cornerback. Yeah, this is a great throw. I'm going to throw it to his inside shoulder. We're going to connect this. Other quarterbacks will say, oh, okay, a cornerback is draped right on him, I'm going to go to the next guy. I'm going to check it down to my running back. And so that's where, to me, it's going to be somewhat dependent on where N'Keal Harry ends. Like, if he goes to Drew Brees in New Orleans, hell yeah, I'm all for that, right? But if he goes to Marcus Mariota, maybe, you know, in Tennessee, like that could be a little more difficult because so many quarterbacks want to throw to open receivers. I'm not sure he's going to give that option to his quarterback.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Another player that my model seems to like a lot is Andy Isabella. Do you think that he's kind of been unfairly typecasted by scouts? I feel like folks naturally will look at the small white receiver, throw him in the slot, send him to New England, that's it. But Andy Isabella has a really interesting size-speed combo. And when you associate that with his production, he's just a really intriguing prospect.
Did you know I had him on my show this week?
I did. Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet. But yeah, I heard that I saw that you had him.
So I got him for about 15 minutes. He's an interesting guy. I mean, obviously, he's like 5'8", like 180 something pounds, right? So,
right.
And it's funny, like, we talk about these receivers. And at the combine, man, between Marquise Brown, who obviously didn't work out, and DK Metcalf, there's a 60 pound weight difference between those players. Isn't that crazy? Like, you really don't see that at any other position.
Yeah.
And it just shows you that, like, a wide receiver is not a wide receiver is not a wide receiver, even if they're asked to win and take advantage of the same areas of the field.
Yep.
Yeah, I asked the same question to Andy Isabella, and he told me that even when he got to UMass, man, they viewed him as solely a slot receiver and that he had to show enough in practices and in games to earn opportunities on the outside. And he's, like, fully expecting to do the exact same thing. Now, if you view him as a slot receiver, there's a lot of comparisons you can make. And it's not just white guys, but a lot of them are white.
Of course.
On the outside, you know, some might compare him to Brandon Cooks if they want to use him there. Some might compare him to Tyler Lockett, T.Y. Hilton, who sometimes does his best damage from the slot as well. I think one of those, like, outside-inside types, inside-outside types, is probably at his best. But, I mean, this guy's got some juice. He's got some jets, as we know, with his 40. He actually beat Denzel Ward in, like, the 100 and 200 in high school. Had the best 60 in the nation as a high school recruit. Do you know he's working with Randy Moss during the pre-draft process as well?
I did not know that. No.
And it's not just like, okay, I'm going to go hang out with Randy Moss for a day. Like, there's some videos online where Randy Moss is straight yelling at him. And Andy was like, I was like, why am I and this other small school receiver the only ones going down to work with Randy Moss?
Yeah.
And then he went through one workout and he's like, I understand why no one wants to work with Randy Moss. Like, apparently he's just super hard on everyone. But it's funny, right? Because, like, what can Randy Moss with his game teach Andy Isabella about his game?
Right.
Because they're in totally different packages. But so much of it was about, you know, non-wasted steps, non-wasted movement, and creating separation and just being able to go all game long.
Yeah.
And I think Andy Isabella, like, if he lands with the Chiefs, fantastic.
Yeah.
Right? If he lands with Seattle, great. Fantastic. If he lands in another team that uses him in the slot, that's cool. I just think he can basically succeed in any situation he goes to as long as the quarterback is adequate.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm almost hoping that my Steelers take a look at him. I think that he'd be interesting to stretch the field there a little bit. So we'll see.
So, and they would use him on the outside, right? Because
they'd have
unless
to.
They're moving Juju to the outside, and we don't know how.
That yeah, I think that in a situation like that, though, you can get really, really creative, right? And you can just do a lot. Like, just imagine what you could do with those two guys, and then hopefully they could get a bigger threat there, or use someone on the outside that they feel comfortable with. But man, I really think that a Juju Andy Isabella combo would be awesome.
So it's like an ideal Marcus Wheaton.
Isabella
could be actually be good.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the way that I kind of see it. So we'll see. I think that he's a guy that I would assume. I mean, what round do you think that he's gonna end up going?
I could see 3-4, probably 3-4 in that area. Even if the production's fantastic, obviously he put up like 1,800 yards last year, and even has like a running back mentality after the catch too, which make more people think of him as a slot receiver. But 3-4 makes a lot of sense.
So two players that I've struggled with evaluating a lot are Paris Campbell and Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown. Do you think that both of those guys are kind of landing spot dependent receivers? What types of roles do you think that they could play at the NFL level? They're just both very difficult to evaluate.
Simply put, I absolutely love Marquise Brown, and I am probably the lowest out there on Paris Campbell. We'll start with Paris Campbell. That's a super difficult evaluation. I mean, we talked about N'Keal Harry and A.J. Brown and DK Metcalf. Like, I think that they're ADOTs, and you can correct me if I'm wrong if you know this. I think they were, like, hovering around 10, okay? I mean, Hakeem Butler, I believe, was up to, like, 12 or 14. Paris Campbell's ADOT was 4.5 yards.
Yeah, he had two deep ball receptions last year, according to PFF.
Right. And I would not dispute them in this scenario, because if you watch his game at Ohio State, if you watch one game, you've watched them all, because I would say, and I'm not PFF, but 80-85% of his routes are just drag routes, crossing routes in the 0 to 5 yard range. And then if it's man coverage, he's using his speed to run all the way to the sideline, create separation against that linebacker or safety or slot corner, catch the ball and keep running. And if it's zone coverage, he'll sit in the middle between the two linebackers, catch the ball, and then run and use his speed towards the sideline and run after the catch. Like, I think a lot of people look at his profile because he is so fast and he has some, you know, that downfield speed, quote unquote, and say he's going to be a vertical receiver. We haven't seen that at all. Like,
right,
at all.
Right.
And there's more to being a vertical receiver than just straight line speed, or else we've seen like Jacoby Ford and like all these dudes be all pros, right? Meanwhile, like Hollywood Brown to me is what a lot of people want Paris Campbell to be. His game is so similar to Deshaun Jackson. And I think that how they can be used is just as in the same way. Now, we have seen some down years every once in a while from Deshaun Jackson. And it a lot of times is quarterback dependent, right? It's offensive dependent. And like, there's a difference in his success with Jameis Winston versus his success with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's like, oh, you're going to be deep one-on-one? Okay, I'm going to throw it to a spot and let you run underneath it. Marquise Brown is a player I would love to see, like, with Kansas City. You know, like, I would love to see him in a Bruce Arians offense. You know, he's the type that just moves differently than every single other person on the field. Now, I would love to get your thoughts on this, JJ. Like, how much does it scare you from like an archetype standpoint that he is what, like 5'10", 166 pounds? Because that 166 number is something like we see from JJ Nelson, another JJ, and the bad JJ. See, this goes back to my theory and really no one else.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at history, since 1991, we haven't seen a sub 170 pound receiver get 1,000 yards in the NFL. Now is Marquise Brown going to play at that weight? Hopefully not. Hopefully he can get to that. I think Deshaun Jackson was 175. Hopefully he can get to that point. Cause I think that D-Jax is the comp. And I do think that Marquise Brown's another one of those players where he's going to do more for your team than he's necessarily going to put up on the stat sheet, which is what we've seen with Deshaun Jackson throughout his career. Deshaun Jackson's impact on quarterbacks is much more than what he does from a production standpoint. And that's really what's drawn me to Marquise Brown. And he had good college production too, Marquise Brown did. So I can understand the upside with Marquise Brown. I think that, you know, the foot injury is scary, the size is a little bit scary, but you know, the way that I view this kind of stuff is usually if I can at least grasp and comprehend what others are seeing and feeling and what teams might see, then that's great. You know, it makes sense. The Paris Campbell stuff, to me, I just have a hard time separating. I mean, we literally just saw a prospect in Curtis Samuel come out from the exact same school with a similar profile overall and sort of archetype overall. And I'm not saying that Curtis Samuel's a bad player or a bad receiver, but if you're going to hype Paris Campbell as a potential late first rounder, early second rounder, it's kind of difficult for me to see that. I usually am turned off by the hybrid types in general.
Yeah.
Just because of we've seen it not translate that smoothly to the NFL. I think that if you want like a positive comp for Paris Campbell, what I've kind of gone to is Percy Harvin, just because I think that's how teams would essentially use Campbell at the next level. And I think it's a safe one just because, you know, we don't necessarily know if, you know, as we just talked about it, we don't necessarily know that Paris Campbell can be a deep ball threat.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I mean, you just named two Urban Meyer wide receivers.
Yeah, know? That's true. Yeah, exactly. Like
that is the role that he was in. And yeah. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm saying we don't know he can do it. And like that, there's a major difference between the two. But I mean, we have to evaluate 100, 200, 300 prospects. So the easier evaluation, maybe it's bias here and maybe I'm just being too honest, but like, hey, I like those more, you know, I like the easier evaluations at times. I'm not saying that I have to every time, but it just makes my life less difficult. But yeah, with like Paris Campbell, and I went and looked because his 8 out of 4.5, like basically no one has that in the NFL.
That's insane. You know? Yeah, it's insane.
And so I was looking at the NFL and like who was around that territory last year. And it's like your Ryan Switzers. It's your Adam Humphreys. Like guys that actually had some production that were getting the ball in that area. But like Adam Humphreys was like 6.5, 7, I believe. Like that's a major difference again between 4.5 yards. Because it's talking about the difference between a Marquise Brown who takes the top off coverages, who has to draw attention every single snap like a DeSean Jackson versus, you know, an even lesser Adam Humphreys versus where he's attacking the field. And to me, if how they're going to be used in college is how they're going to be used in the NFL, I feel like I can find more Paris Campbells than I can Marquise Browns. And in the day, sometimes that makes the decision for me.
Yeah, and I also think from a landing spot standpoint, you absolutely need to find a creative offensive coordinator for Paris Campbell.
Unless he can just do stuff that we don't know he can do.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Which I don't think we can just safely, you know, assume that.
Right.
So my model doesn't necessarily hate Kelvin Harmon, but I think that the majority of people like him more than what I do. I mean, I weigh my model a good bit just because I've seen historical success with it, and it's also more skewed towards fantasy. It actually sides with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, which it sounds like you have some hesitation with JJAW. So I'm curious as to how you feel about both of those prospects and kind of their roles that they could play at the next level.
By the way, JJ, every single time, I love the positive spin you put on these, right? My model doesn't hate Kelvin Harmon, yeah. Is what you said.
It doesn't despise Kelvin Harmon. It's just I've seen Kelvin Harmon ranked as the top wide receiver on some board. Like some people like him that much.
Yeah, I think you spend too much time on the dark web.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, a lot like N'Keal Harry, Kelvin Harmon is he's comfortable in contact. And I think it's just easy evaluations. When a player creates separation, they sustain it, right? And like that's not Kelvin Harmon. Now, he, again, can win in those 50-50 situations. Maybe they turn 60-40, 70-30. That's obviously super optimistic. But, I mean, it goes back to the point that it's the situation he's going to land in. And unlike N'Keal Harry, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't believe Kelvin Harmon played that much in the slot. Like they mainly lined him up on the outside and asked him really to operate along the sideline. Like a lot of his difficult highlight catches are toe tapping, body control, and he's really good in that area, but it's just not something that that's the only trait that I want. And especially, I mean, people might point to, if they really like him, they might point to someone like Chris Godwin, okay? Now, the difference in Chris Godwin was an outstanding athlete. Plus, he had that area of dominance. Plus, he was super young. Kelvin Harmon has production, is young. He'll be less than 22 going into the NFL, but he posts an athletic profile, I believe, in the 18th percentile, you know? So that's like the major difference where you say, okay, Chris Godwin maybe can develop in this area because we see him create separation in some ways, but mainly he shines on and has that trump card in contested catches. Kelvin Harmon has a trump card in contested catches, but the athletic profile doesn't match up necessarily. And J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is interesting because if we talk about highlights, and in many ways I like to whittle down evaluations into like easily consumable, you know, pieces of information, because I know I don't want to read 10,000 word scouting reports. Like his most notable plays are like these absolutely true Ben Wallace, Dennis Rodman type box out situations, yeah, where he like, and they won't just use it Stanford, just like in the red zone and in zone fades. Like they'll use it in like a 3rd-and-3 situation on like the 40-yard line and like an isolated coverage, ask him just to like go up and take this ball like he's dunking against little kids, and he does it. Like those are the plays that really stand out to me. It's funny, despite his size, and he's like a very, very big human being, he has some like small game to him as well. Like at 6'2", 225 pounds, like he won't, like Hakeem Butler or DK Metcalf, use his hands or his strength or his size to create separation. Like he kind of runs routes like an Andy Isabella, like a smaller receiver. Like short choppy steps, hands at the waist, and create separation with his feet. And he can kind of do that. The more I watch JJW, the more I like him. And he's growing on me. And I think that that combination of creating separation like a small wide receiver and then having this bigger wide receiver moments is a very fascinating combination. I just don't think like if he was just a jump ball receiver, we can get behind him that much. Because how often do we really see that week to week, JJ? Like twice in the league? Right. So.
So would you prefer Arcega-Whiteside then over Harmon?
100%.
Okay. All right.
What does your model say? Does your model not hate JJ Arcega-Whiteside either?
No, my model likes JJ Arcega-Whiteside quite a bit. I think he came out as like the wide receiver 5 in this class with the model. So yeah, they definitely likes him. But also the model skews towards players with initials as their first name. So. So we've covered a lot of wide receivers here. Who are some of the other wideouts we haven't talked about that you seem to like more than most? I mean, we haven't talked about Miles Boykin. Maybe you like him. I've seen a lot of Deebo Samuel love. Maybe you like him. Who are some of your guys?
Yeah, let's talk about Miles Boykin. I think Miles Boykin is a top 3 receiver in this class.
Nice.
What do you think of him? Have you gotten to him yet?
Well, it's tough. I mean, I think that he seemed to improve with better quarterback play. My model doesn't love him, just because of the lack of college production. But that's one of those things where I try to talk to people on this podcast about this all the time, is that, you know, my prospect models and my projections too, you know, from a fantasy perspective, I'm not using them as the tell me everything about these players. I'm using it as a guide as to these are the trends that usually happen. A guy like Miles Boykin can absolutely pop and work and be successful at the next level, especially when you combine what some film guys are saying with his athleticism, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely am not one to say I'm not going to get my. I actually will probably end up targeting him in rookie drafts, but obviously, you know, we'll see where he ends up going.
Do you know what's funny? And we know that Martavis Bryant played behind like Nuke Hopkins and Sammy Watkins. Yeah. And I'm sure his production wasn't very good. Like Miles Boykin's style of game reminds me so much of Martavis Bryant. Just like these big body athletes that if given free releases, just put corners in a blender and it doesn't look like they're moving fast. Then you see them just create a yard, 2 yards, 3 steps of separation just easily. I think because of the storyline, the progression of his game, of his evaluation, like people are going to say he's a combine creation. I'll say that, you know, a lot of times for half the season, basically the Notre Dame quarterback just absolutely stunk. And there were situations where like he was open and the ball just wasn't even near his frame. But man, like he creates separation, he sustains it, and then he also has the body control to come down with difficult catches. And I think if there's one that even maybe more than DK Metcalf, like if he reaches his ceiling, Miles Boykin might be it. And there's already stuff that he does, like the releases, you know, like Chris Ballard was on the Pat McAfee podcast and talked about how the most difficult part of receiver evaluations entering the NFL is their lack of physical play in the first 5 yards, and they'll face that all the time in the NFL. Miles Boykin does that so well already. Like you turn on, I think it's the game against Clemson. I know that game wasn't necessarily close for the entire time, but he's making these easy fluid releases at 6'4", 220 pounds. That really, it's it's breathtaking in some ways. And so Miles Boykin is someone who, again, I think is a top three receiver in this class. And I understand that the production isn't there. And it's weird because he's kind of come out of nowhere since, you know, early March. But there, he has a real chance, if he lands at the right spot, to really hit home, in my opinion.
I mean, I think that you just set a spot that he could go to and potentially thrive in Indianapolis. Yep. That would be a great landing spot for him. How many wide receivers do you see getting drafted in round one? You know, are there any dark horse wideouts you might get drafted higher than we're expecting too?
Look, I'm not as connected as, you know, your Daniel Jeremiah's, your Lance Erlines, your Dane Brugler's, all that kind of stuff. And I think even you and I just talking about this and observing people on Twitter, more than anything, this is the position where opinions are split. It's kind of the receiver class and the cornerback class in this year's group. Like, there's no name at the top that everyone completely agrees on. And then that even means 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there'll be disagreements on as well. Long story short, I bet we see two in round one. The earliest I could see one is maybe the Washington Redskins, but it's always difficult for a team that might have, you know, a number of grades on at a position that are very similar to say, okay, we're going to be the first ones to start the run on this position. You know, that must be a difficult spot, because if there's, you know, four grades that are within 0.2 of the same round or the same grade, like, you think you might be able to get one of those four. So you want to just want to leave them up on the board. Now, if a team has DK Metcalf way higher than anyone else, if a team like the Chiefs later on has, you know, Marquise Brown way higher than everyone else, that's an easy pick for them. But I don't know if it's going to be the same thing throughout the NFL. So it wouldn't surprise me if we only see one. I bet we see two, but within the first two rounds, we'll have, you know, more than a handful. We might have 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, your example, it's almost like quarterbacks in redraft leagues, yep. Right? In fantasy, where like you don't want to be the first one to pick that, or even tight end to a degree, but you don't want to be the first person to pick that player because you don't know when the rest of that league is going to pick that player. And all of a sudden, the longer and longer it goes without them selecting that position, the more devalued your pick essentially becomes, right?
Now, at the same time, a few years ago, I don't think any of us expected Corey Davis, John Ross, and Mike Williams to all go in the top 10, you know? And I would say, I mean, I love Corey Davis as a prospect. I would say I love a lot more of these receivers more than I love Mike Williams and John Ross, you know? So who knows? Maybe we see a couple move up into the top 10, top 15. But as it stands right now, you know, about 2 weeks out, it doesn't seem like there is going to be one probably in the top 10. I would say 15 is probably the earliest.
Josh, man, I really appreciate the time. I think listeners are really going to enjoy your takes on this year's wide receiving class. For anyone not following Josh on Twitter, you can find him at Josh Norris. He's also got the Roto World Football podcast and his work over on rotoworld.com. You can find me on Twitter at LateRoundQB, and don't forget to subscribe to this show by searching for it pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later this week for another mailbag episode.